Okay, so drop everything you're doing and just wire me $2,000. Don't worry, I just need to get access to a vast fortune left to me by a distant relative who just happens to be a Nigerian prince. I promise that when I get the money, you will get a big cut. An oft-told tale, that one, the notorious Nigerian email scam. Seems like a product of the internet, but actually it is just the latest iteration of a con game dating back centuries. Case in point, the Spanish prisoner scheme, prominent in the 19th century during the Napoleonic Wars. In that scam, the letters, though often penned by con men in Britain, seemed to have come from Spain. The letter recipient was entreated to send funds to a man imprisoned or otherwise confined, who would use the money to get access to his fortune. Once he did that, he vowed to share the wealth with his benefactor. Robert Whittaker is a PhD candidate in the Department of History at the University of Texas at Austin. He wrote about Spanish prisoner letters for the history journal The Appendix. My esteemed PhD candidate Whittaker, my most enthusiastic salutations of the day.
Thanks, and to you too.
Your favorite in this genre is one you found written by a person who called himself Luis Ramos. What was his pitch?
Yeah, so Luis is stuck in the military fortress in Barcelona, or so he claims.
I have been condemned by my political enemies to 16 years of penal servitude that I must extinguish in this fortress, where I am suffering so bitterly that I am deprived of all communication outside, even with my daughter.
He's come to know their address either by looking up obituary notices or by looking in the phone book, and he's offering up his marks, £37,000, in return for some help with some legal fees. He's offering up also his 14-year-old daughter. He wants the mark to care for this child.
You're talking about his target, his sucker.
That's right, yes.
And it worked?
Well, it depended. He's writing in a pre-internet age, and so he doesn't really have a good sense as to where his marks are actually located. In some cases, he sends it to the wrong address. There are several cases where Ramos actually sent a letter to somebody who'd been dead for a number of years. In some cases, also, Ramos got the name of the potential mark incorrect. For instance, instead of writing to Mr. Harry Robinson, he wrote to Mr. Robertson Harry and said that he knew Mr. Robertson Harry through his wife, Mrs. Mary Harry.
You mentioned the internet. When we're speaking of Nigerian cons, those email blasts go to millions and millions of people, of whom one might likely be enough of a sucker to bite. The handwritten Spanish prisoner letters couldn't have reached more than a handful of prospective victims. How in the world could these things have paid off?
Even though Ramos had to do more work in order to try to get that money, this was his profession, right? He was a career criminal. You know, what's amazing about Ramos's letters is that they're so well crafted. In addition to the actual letter, he also supplies supporting documents, evidence that he's actually in prison and that his story is true. The initial notice of arrest for Ramos, newspaper articles saying that Ramos has been arrested. And then also eventually, because of the nature of the Ramos drama, it also includes Ramos's death certificate.
Now, the Spanish prisoner goes back at least a couple hundred years. Going back only a century, you say that the early part of the 20th century saw a huge surge in this scam.
Well, one of the main reasons why it happened was because Spain, in particular, the origin point for most of these letters, was going through a major period of political disruption, first caused by the Spanish-American War at the beginning of the 20th century, but then also leading up to the Spanish Civil War in the 1930s. And going along with this kind of political upheaval was a favorite trick for these Spanish prisoners. They write their own stories, borrowing from the headlines, making it seem like they and the reader were playing a part in this political drama going on in Spain. Another reason why this con became more common at the beginning of the 20th century was because, in particular in Britain, you saw the publication of Who's Who. This is kind of a progenitor of modern-day Facebook, where the British elite would apply to being a who's who, and they would share their personal details and also include their addresses. So one of the later con artists that I look at, by the name of Vicente Olivier, used a copy of Who's Who to send Spanish prisoner letters to the British elite during the 1930s and 1940s.
I'm taking the greatest chance of my life in trusting you such a delicate matter as this, but the strange and unfortunate position in which fate has placed me has compelled me to trouble you. I cannot count on friends or acquaintances, because the majority of them became my enemies since my disgrace, and I do not wish them to know my terrible predicament. Neither I know which one to trust, so I decided to trust you all my secret. Depending on your loyalty and absolute discretion, and imploring that you realize my situation and save me.
We tend to think of scams like this as something that bubbles up, and then everybody gets wise to them, and then they just sort of vanish from the face of the earth. But no, the Spanish prisoner con is a steady state. Why is that?
Well, my argument is that people are attracted to easy money, but also they're looking for a good emotion, a compelling story, right? You're receiving this letter from a desperate person, either in prison or somehow else indisposed, and it's up to you, you alone, to help them. And, you know, in many of these cases, the prisoner's not only talking about their own life, but also the life of maybe a loved one, like a 14-year-old daughter. And so I think in many cases, it's not so incredible to believe that somebody would buy into this scam, because they get caught up in the emotions and the drama of the story presented by the criminal.
Bob, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Robert Whitaker is a PhD candidate at the University of Texas.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.